The one I love belongs.
I would like to begin our Public Engagement Commission meeting for Wednesday, October 10th, 2018. And we can start with the Pledge of Allegiance.
Let me begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic which stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call.
Commissioner Manion.
Hello.
Okay. Commissioner Uribe.
Here.
Commissioner Ibarra.
Here.
Commissioner Schneider.
Here.
Commissioner Massey.
Here.
Vice Chair Bliss.
Here.
Chair Paz.
Here. Do we have any public comments?
There are no speaker slips.
Thank you. And I would like to take a moment to introduce our newest commissioner, Ganesh Manian. Is that correct? I wanted to pronounce it the right way. You might have to correct us all in the beginning. Would you like to talk about yourself for a couple minutes?
I'm a sophomore at DP. I do a variety of stuff. I play golf. I do robotics with Riviera Robotics. I also play I play cello. That's a little basic introduction about me.
Okay. Thank you. And welcome once again. So we have a first item A1, presentation by the District Elections Committee. We receive a presentation by Ms. Jackie Enda, representative of the Goleta District Elections Committee. Staff?
We have Ms. Jacqueline Linda here, the representative of the Goleta District Elections Committee, as you mentioned. She's here to give us a presentation on not necessarily the settlement agreement, but where the District Election Committee was at when they're forming the questions as part of that settlement agreement as we make our path to district elections. So I had a previous meeting with Ms. Inda where, you know, it was very revealing of some of the questions that this commission has been asking is, why are we revisiting this issue of the four-year term for mayor? Or what is behind a certain question? What was the committee's motivation for asking that question? And as we continue to explore these questions in the path of the district elections, I thought it would be very beneficial for her to come here and talk to you from the perspective of the District Elections Committee, the importance of the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
Well, good evening. This is actually, you guys all received the handouts, and I believe that they were also posted online. So we'll go through the handouts, but I'd really like to have this opportunity to have you guys have some of those questions answered. So as we go through this, if there's a question that you have, a thought that you might explore, we'll go through it together. So what is the California Voting Rights Act? California Voting Rights Act, basically it creates a path for different communities of special interest and what we call protected class citizens to get civically engaged and have the opportunity to participate within councils and elected positions. So Goleta created a resolution. Obviously, Goleta was an at-large city, and it was moving into the idea of potentially establishing district elections. And as some of you guys may be following, with district elections, a lot of things has happened throughout the community, not only here, but also in the county and in our visiting counties up north and then down south as well. And as they've quickly developed their district elections process, what is important to note is that Goleta actually did something a little bit different with setting up the Civic Engagement Commission or the Public Engagement Commission. And so this presentation is really to explain that what we are hoping to establish in Goleta is an opportunity for not just the city perspective on drafting up that final resolution that will be adopted with the maps, but the community aspect of it too. So that as we move along in the next couple of years, we could incorporate all of the things that we've learned from other cities and maybe potentially have the civic engagement so that we have developed that final resolution to be really, really comprehensive of all of what the best interest of Goleta might be in the future. So you have some language there of the actual settlement. It's pretty basic. The settlement basically gives the opportunity to establish district elections. And then you have the resolution of intent, which is also mostly legal language. So what did that trigger? There's a five-step process. The first step is obviously to do some kind of public engagement, get the community engaged to talking to council within a 45-day process to establish if they want to go into district elections. Next step would be to collect the data from the census, would be forming the maps, and then engage the community in drafting that final resolution. Now, the interesting thing about what Goleta did, or not the interesting thing, but the special thing that Goleta did, is that they kind of incorporated its own little process somewhere right after that very first step. And that was to start dialogue with the community until you have your census in 2022. And then, of course, the final step after all of this process would be to adopt a final resolution. Many other cities have adopted final resolutions that are pretty boilerplate to here's your districts, here's your maps, here's your boundaries, that's what happens. But the city of Goleta has the opportunity to put in that final resolution so many other things that could really make that document be the standing document to change the pathway of how we elect representatives for Goleta in the future. So like I said, most of these other steps would come in through that census collection and then the drafting of the maps and then on to step number five. And I'll continue to say this over and over again, the innovation of Goleta by creating this public engagement commission is pretty special. In fact, many other cities have explored doing something like this, and many other cities have chosen not to because of the overwhelming impact that your civic engagement, your public engagement commission actually has over that final resolution that would create kind of like cement district elections into your city. So let's explore this resolution a little bit further. We know that the city actually passed the intent to create districts or by district voting. What that means is by district voting, you have an opportunity to not only develop the maps, but folks that live within those areas would be the only ones that would be able to run and win their elections and then be representatives. Of course, they're using 2020 census data. I know that you also have previous data that you might play around with, but the 2020 census will be critical, although the data won't change too drastically. You haven't changed too much within these years, but there's more that can be done from here until your 2020 census to really look at what other ways we could engage community and how can we cement it in the language that will go in that final resolution. Let's see. So there are a lot of different questions, things like how many majority-minority districts should be based off of the census data. I think you guys know your community well enough to know where maybe some of your majority-minority neighborhoods would be. And if you get rid of the word district and you change it to the word neighborhood, it might be a little bit more easier to understand. Because most people have a hard time thinking of districts and boundaries and maps when it's much easier to think, okay, this is the neighborhood that I live in. And how do I get civically engaged in my neighborhood? Or how do we create the cementation within the document to get folks civically engaged to then be able to meet that CVRA, which is actually your bottom line? This particular commission was developed to try to help increase majority-minority representation. And if you increase participation with civic engagement into those neighborhoods, and then those neighborhood folks start to get active in commissions and committees, then you created a, what we call a pipeline, into potentially running an effective campaign and running for office. So let's explore the commission. Does it have a life? It does. The Public Engagement Commission does have a lifespan. It's supposed to be kind of done and complete. That doesn't mean it's done and complete and final. It means that most of your targets would be completed by the time that your maps are instituted into that final resolution, and that final resolution has all of your engagement process, all of the community engagement process, and you've vetted the community to explore different options that would cement that document down to potentially deal with some of the hiccups that other cities might be dealing with. So, but that doesn't mean that the Civic Engagement Commission, the Public Engagement Commission is completed and done and over with once the actual maps are in place. Your city council and your community might choose, you know what, there's other ways of continuing this work after that, and now you'll have different targets at that point. This particular timeline for this stipulation is kind of created so that it edges you along a process, but it gives you the opportunity to explore many other things. It also gives you an opportunity to continue going after that on, in other issues that more be that would be more focused on public engagement in general. So what is a good district structure? Of course, a map, a body of government elected to represent particular classes. And obviously, if you are looking at civic engagement in majority-minority populations and what we call protected classes, which is all of the different factors from LGBTQ to different segments of community with impoverishment and all kinds of different things that are all protected class. How do you get those folks civically engaged and then properly participating? That's really the last aspect of some of your stipulation, which we'll explore next. So you have a few targets with your commission. And I won't go over them all in depth. There are some things that you have actually already started to complete. Oh, hold on. And so there are other things that you've already taken into consideration. I know you guys are communicating about having all city council meetings after 5 p.m. You've done a very, very good job with pushing forward the pay equity issue in the community and putting it on the ballot. That's a huge step for civic engagement, and we all know that. There are other things that you could explore while you're waiting for that census. And so what can those other targets be? If you've identified all of those initial targets, you have the opportunity to explore really the civic engagement part that I think is kind of a trick of where you are as a community. Goleta, with your commission, has the opportunity to really start to look at what other cities are doing within this county and follow the trends of how they've kind of missed certain language within that final resolution that would have helped them address civic engagement and create it so that it's in that final resolution. And we can get into a little bit more of a discussion of that. But there are things like what happens when there's a vacancy. And we know that that's been a hot topic issue in many different cities that have developed districts. Do we set up 4 neighborhoods or 5 neighborhoods? Do we identify a mayor elected in terms of 4? Is that an at-large mayor? Is that a mayor that takes up one of the seats? That would make quite a bit of a difference. Some of those questions will be answered with your census and when you do your mapping. But questions like, should there be a special election when there's a vacancy, are questions that you can start to ask now that can be vetted and gone through a process within the Civic Engagement Commission that would then be presented to council as an option to submit into that final resolution. So your commission really becomes the builder of how to build a pipeline to get folks civically engaged and then on to potentially office in the future. Now here's the question. How many of any of our city processes or any of our elected official processes have ever asked what neighborhood somebody lives in before they participate in any kind of civic engagement? Most people don't ask that question. Unless it's something like a CDBG commission and then you kind of have to create that map. The reality is most people don't ask that simple question. So what if you create a civic engagement process where you have a whole set of really good folks learning how to be commissioners at a specific commission or participate in civic engagement, but you haven't asked the question and you haven't targeted other neighborhoods, and now you have a whole wonderful cast of crew folks that could run for the one district. So those are the kinds of things that you can explore, is creating the, and you can explore many other things, but one of the focuses of the CVRA was to develop a commission or develop a process where folks from different areas in a community could become civically engaged, that could be accessible to them, and then they have a pipeline to go into council once they're ready for that or they feel like they can run an effective campaign and win. Really, with district elections, you have to think of it very micro instead of macro. And the micro is the young person that grows up and lives in a neighborhood, goes to all of their local schools, you know, goes on to become a successful person in life, and then can run a very successful campaign and represent their community. Somebody who viscerally knows the issues that impact their protected class and other at-large community needs. And so how do you create that pipeline? That's actually a question that is one of the questions that you could explore, the civic engagement part. And starting with a very simple question that you have a pretty good grasp on is, how many seats do you have, how many commissions do you have, and how many are appointed by neighborhood? If you get rid of the word district and you substitute it with neighborhood, you start to draw out where your needs are. And knowing those needs, then you can start to try to draw out how to connect with the other neighborhoods that are missing and help them get into that pipeline of becoming representatives of commissions and committees. So let's see, I think. That's pretty much it for the PowerPoint, but I would like to engage more in a discussion with you all of questions that you might have, ideas, concerns, and I'll leave it up to you.
Can I first ask commissioners to turn off your speaker light unless you are asking to speak?
I have a question that has come up for us from the original list of concerns, and we have allowed it to pass for the moment while we were dealing with the question of time of meetings and compensation. But I think that at least some of us are very curious about the whole question of the 4-year mayor and why the 4 years, why the District Elections Committee thought the 4 years was appropriate or more appropriate. And I think we still need an answer to that because this is the first election we're actually having for a mayor. Mm-hmm. And the citizens just recently voted for a 2-year mm-hmm. rotation. So that it would help us understand whether we should move forward with that, tell the city council it's a bad idea, whatever. So that doesn't go to the heart of what you're raising, but I know it would be good to just hear if you know the rationale for that. If you could tell us, that would be helpful.
Well, the rationale for that is sort of following along the line that it takes quite some time to sit on a chair, learn a little bit about the process, gain the ropes. When you have a district elections-based body, you have different representatives from different communities sitting in front of you. And so you may have different issues that will impact the community. Well, that mayor has to sort of be spread out at large if you're going to elect that mayor at large. And so not only does that person need to have a full grasp of all the different districts, but also needs that time to not be focused on campaigns every year, which would take if you're running an at-large race, right? So a lot of that has to do with the getting prepared to run a campaign and then rerun and run again. And if you're running every 2 years, it becomes pretty difficult because then you're concentrated on a campaign at large where most people would be running by district. And so the idea behind doing the 4-year term is really because we respect term limits. It helps the influx of getting new and innovative solutions to councils and elected bodies. But a 4-year term is an exploration that you might consider if all of your other districts are 4 years to also incorporate into your mayor seat as well. I think it's a little bit difficult to have two different kinds of races if you have your 4-year terms and your 2-year terms. And if you're looking at district elections as 4-year terms, then you might want to explore continuing that dialogue of, well, then maybe the mayor should be 4 years as well. And why that would be important is because then they're able to concentrate a lot more fully on the city and all of the different districts and all of the different vetted needs to be that secondary voice for maybe one of the representatives that will be bringing up issues specific to their district and that maybe other districts may be mirroring as issues as well.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions? No other questions.
All right, so I have a couple of questions for you guys. In the civic engagement part, there's an exploration of outreach efforts. My question is not a question that would, you know, need to be answered, but really it's a question that I leave you with. And that is this exploration of outreach efforts. How much of the civic engagement process are you actually focusing on outreaching to the folks that you would create a pipeline for different neighborhoods to then be able to cement that into a final resolution for districts? And the reason why I ask that is because civic engagement can go 100 different ways. But if we are not creating a document that will cement district elections in a process that's fair and equitable, then every 10 years, you'll have the same dialogue over and over again. Every 5 years, you'll have the same dialogue over and over again. And anytime you have a new rotation of staff, it starts all over again. So when you start to really explore the part of outreach efforts, think about it in that way. Think about every step that you move forward in creating outreach efforts. Are they developing pipelines for different neighborhoods, maybe not different districts because you don't have them yet, but different neighborhoods into commission seats, into committee seats, and then how are you drafting up that resolution that will go in front of council? Because really your commission will have the power to incorporate all kinds of different language that has been vetted by your community to create that kind of pipeline. And that actually is what I applaud the most out of Goleta. The strength the council had by saying, you know what, this belongs to the community. we're going to have a commission. It's going to be full of folks who will bring back things that we can explore and implement into that final resolution. And you have to think about it that way, because 10, 20 years from now, we'll have different council members, and everybody will read a basic legal document exactly the same way and interpret it in hundreds of different ways. But you have the opportunity to cement within a document pathways and solutions to maybe other hiccups that other cities are facing. So not only exploring how to fill vacancies and things like that and pressing on that recommendation, but also what kind of outreach efforts you're doing to create that pipeline for different neighborhoods. Because if we cement those into the document, then that's what becomes the stream from this point forward until the document gets amended. Okay.
I have a question. I know the questions are...
Hi, Jack.
I do have a question regarding, or if you can provide some type of information regarding some of the pitfalls that we have, that you have seen in other jurisdictions, and what are the things that we should prepare for? And if you could make some suggestions on some guidelines that we should use going forward, because I too see this commission engaging the public in other avenues, whether it be with letting neighborhoods know when there's problems with the housing, when there's problems with neighborhood development, even neighborhood conflicts along the way. So could you share some of those?
There are, I could definitely help you with identifying what those kinds of processes are. I know we don't have all night, so I don't want to take up most of your agenda, but there are things that we could explore together, and that's something that I could definitely do at any time, or bring on one of the folks from the District Elections Committee to help you along in those processes. But, there are many different, everything from water boards to school districts to special commissions, anything that's electable will be going into districts sometime in the next few years, if they're not already. But if you explore the ones that are, especially if you go down south a little bit, and if you're starting to go up north and you look at maybe Lompoc, you look at the city of Santa Maria, Santa Barbara, other folks that have already incorporated, their final resolutions were very basic unless they explored civic engagement. And then you had all of the extras. So extras like filling a vacancy. And I'll tell you where the issue is. If you don't have it in that final resolution, then it gets very tricky to try to incorporate it without having it go to a ballot and getting all kinds of different ideas and mixed feelings, and information can go pretty much anywhere. But if your process is to get the voters of the community the ability to elect their own representatives, then you're relinquishing power from council, you're relinquishing power from commissioners, and you're relinquishing power from anybody who's electable and giving it to its community. So that's one of the ones that I've seen as an obstacle. But when it comes to civic engagement and all of the other factors, I go back to the same question. How many of us are actually asking folks, what neighborhood do you live in? Whether it's commissions or committees, or whether it's all of the folks watching on TV that have political action groups. How many of those folks are actually identifying their boards and their community engagement organizations by different neighborhoods? And I can tell you that that's almost like asking the other taboo questions, like, do you own a gun and is it locked and safed, right? Most people just don't ask that question. But it should be a question that we're asking, especially if we're starting to develop a city by districts. And remember, if you change the word district into neighborhood, people will understand it a little bit better. Because right now, if you throw in a survey, a question about what do you think about districts, or do you want somebody 4 years when they haven't understood the process of district elections and how now you're going to have different representatives, change the word and call it neighborhoods. And if you start to explain, your neighborhood representative will be here for 4 years. Your whole council, your different elected bodies will have different people representing them. And do you want your mayor to be elected at large in the same cycle everybody else is in? It might help people understand it just a little bit better. Because districts are a little bit different, and they're harder to understand unless the chain is already moving in that, and you've already had 3 or 4 cycles of district elections representatives, that you start to see things that should have, may have been incorporated into that final resolution. One of the things that I leave you with is the idea of maybe presenting to your council the formation of their commissions and committees by neighborhood seats, because that would help your outreach efforts, and that they start to do outreach to the specific seats that are vacant if they don't have those specific neighborhoods representative, because everyone should have the opportunity. I know that there's other places that have said, well, you know, we live on a coastline, but I don't know if we're ever going to find somebody that will represent this commission. And in reality, if you create the pipeline, most folks will step up to the plate, but they need to know how to access it. And most importantly, they need to be able to understand it a little bit. So if you lose the language of districts and you start to use the language of neighborhoods, and you start to explain that maybe commissions and committees are representative of neighborhoods and voices for those neighborhoods, so that we could see that there are similarities and differences in different parts of the community, then you start to really start to fill that pipeline towards somebody potentially running. Maybe you have a whole slew of folks from different commissions and committees from different parts of the community that would then potentially run and win and become elected officials. And I tell you, the difficult one that you've done, which you've spent some time on, is what's on the ballot now, because that definitely will help people look at that final end product and say, okay, how do I get there? And definitely building that, getting there, is identifying the very first step of outreach, your public engagement process, and the people that you have, whether it's anywhere from commissions to committees to youth council, and asking the question, how many of us live in different parts, different neighborhoods in the city? Then you start to see where your outreach needs to happen to fill those seats with those individuals from that community.
Yes.
I just wanted to make a statement to the commission that as we get closer to the 2020 census, we will be exploring some of these questions. And we've already started on some. And as Ms. Inda has indicated, it is important to answer some of these questions prior to. So as the resolution is being formed, those matters are being taken into consideration. We will have an experienced consultant helping us through that process. And there will be several focus group and workshops that you will all be a part of. And hopefully, as Ms. Inda has indicated, reaching out to the community in all sectors of our the city to engage that community in forming that resolution. So there is more work ahead of us. And in the interim, as Ms. Inda indicated, is getting that engagement from the community, making sure that we're out there and letting them know about this process, that this process is coming, and just making them tune in so that as we get closer to the process, they're already a part of these meetings and these discussions. So that will be forthcoming, and we will continue to work on that path with these questions that were first initiated through the settlement agreement, and then we'll keep moving forward.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments? Oh, thank you.
All right, thank you, guys.
And we move on to item B1, approval of Public Engagement Commission meeting minutes for August 15th, 2018. Do we have any additions, deletions, changes? If we don't, then can someone make a motion to approve?
I make a motion, we accept.
Okay.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Ibarra and seconded. And can we go ahead and vote? And all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Okay. We move on to item C1, selection of meeting dates for 2019. I know the last time we talked about this, almost a year ago or about, so we had some conflicts. So hopefully we have enough opportunity to kind of look at the dates and they work for everyone. Yes, Ms. Uribe.
So before we go to that part, I would like to know.
Can you turn your microphone?
Sorry. So before we move on, I have a question. So the suggestions that are made in the previous meetings, how are we going to, for example, the Citizens Academy, that's somebody. So are we exploring it? Are we doing it? Are we not doing it? I mean, what's the process? Because one thing that it makes me nervous, not only here or everywhere that I am, is that we hear very good ideas and then nothing happens and we may forget about those or what have you. So it would be great, I think, that if we can take those ideas and decide whether what are we going to do with them, basically. Are we going to put them in practice or not, but make a decision and then make it either happen or forget about it.
So if I could answer that, we can give more information in the director's report, but when people come and make public comment, just as they do for city council meetings, staff writes those comments down and takes action. As I said to Mr. Shelor last meeting, we are actually in the process of developing a Citizens Academy, and it will be presented to the City Council later this year for hopefully implementation later in the spring. So it's not necessarily something that would come back to this committee for a discussion item.
Okay.
But you would certainly have the opportunity to give input on it at the City Council level. And then the other item that he brought forward was a question that was sent over to the Planning Department about why public noticing was happening within a certain radius. So we do take those questions, and we are happy to report back on the status of them during director's report when they don't come to a full-blown item for the Public Engagement Commission. Okay. Primarily, we're looking at addressing those seven items that are in the settlement agreement, because that's the task of the committee. But we do bring other items like the community survey, because it makes sense as some of those items are incorporated.
And how about the ride-alongs? Would that be considered?
Is that the item that you discussed when you brought it up during one of the comments? It's on the list to discuss with the Sheriff's Department, but we have not done so.
Okay. So would you let us know what happens with that?
Sure.
Thank you.
I think the other part, too, is that you could always come back to the chair and I could ask on behalf of the commission what the status is, or have staff come back to the commission at the next meeting and talk about the status of something. So with that in mind, can we move on to selection of meeting dates for 2019? We have a number of meeting dates, February, April, June, August, October, and December.
So if I could, as we head into our second year, our first year meeting dates weren't consistent on the same day of the week and date, and that happened because we have a number of commission meetings, commissions that meet, and we try to schedule them regularly. And because this was a new commission, there was just a little conflict with that. So, for example, our next meeting is on December 13th, which happens to be a Thursday. What we looked at for 2019 is doing them on the third Wednesday of the month, so it's consistent, third Wednesday every other month. And none of those dates appear to conflict with any holidays like Valentine's Day and such that we changed the dates of this last year.
Any questions, discussion, concerns? No. Would someone like to make the motion to approve the selection of meeting dates for 2019?
So moved.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Schneider and seconded by Ms. Uribe. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. That moves us to item C2, discussion of the community survey results. And we're going to provide some feedback to staff on the results of the community survey. So we're looking forward to this presentation.
Thank you. Well, thank you. It's exciting to actually be able to bring this information back to you. I hope that some of you were able to hear the September 4th presentation mm-hmm. by Dr. Tim McLarney when he came back to give the presentation and a detailed PowerPoint to the council on the report. As you know from your packet this time around, it was an extensive report with a lot of data to go through. But I'll just walk through a few of the highlights since you had a presentation earlier mm-hmm. From Dr. McLarney about the process and how we developed the questions and what the goals were. I will skip that part, but I'd certainly be happy to answer any questions. Overall, this survey results were very positive. 30% of residents had been in contact with the city in the last year and provided high ratings for city staff across the three areas tested, with more than 8 in 10 residents indicating that staff are accessible, professional, and helpful. This is really good for us to know because sometimes we just hear the complaints, but it's good to know that on balance, people are very happy and feel that the staff is being responsive. For every one dissatisfied resident, there were 8 satisfied residents, which Dr. McLarney, who does hundreds of surveys, has done hundreds of surveys, probably even thousands in the course of his career, said was very high. Residents shared generally favorable opinions of Goleta and the overall quality of life in Goleta. 87% said it was excellent or good. Goleta was a very good place to live and a place to raise a family. Although it was positive, the ratings for Goleta as a place to work and Goleta as a place to retire were a little bit lower, but still over 60%. When people were asked what they liked most about living in Goleta, they primarily said open space and nature preserves. 41% of people said that. And it's interesting to note that the next answers, the small town atmosphere, parks and rec, beaches and ocean, all were 16% or less. So that's a big, big difference when you say 41% of people said they liked the open space and nature preserved as opposed to all of the items below that.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
I took the survey, but I don't remember. For each of these things where there's like a list, was there an other option where they could write in like a different alternative?
I don't recall. I can look through the survey and let you know. I think there was just, if I recall correctly, I think it was just a list. Do you remember?
I do remember Dr. McLarney saying that on some questions there were options that were, or there was like a blank and you would give your answer and then they collected the various answers. And in some cases, the community members were responding with that same answer. Those were some limited questions. I don't remember exactly, and we can look that up for you and contact you directly to which questions there were those fill-ins. But in the report, I do believe that it there is a discussion of that. And if I can find it before this report is over, I will announce it. If not, I'll let you know directly.
Approximately. Oh, go ahead.
I have a question apropos of neighborhoods. I didn't have a chance to look at everything in the survey, but I'm assuming that the questions were not broken down by neighborhood, so that, in other words, we don't have a good sense of whether or not all the satisfaction is around La Patera versus around Elwood, just to make an example. That if we still have access to the data, since I'm assuming that wasn't done, it might be useful actually to know that, to run some of the more important questions from the survey by sort of geographic region just to see what we're seeing.
Well, thank you for asking that. We actually did run all that data through the quadrants. The quadrants as defined for the purpose of this survey were north of 101, south of 101, west of Fairview and east of Fairview. So, for example, the southwest quadrant, sorry, the southeast quadrant is Old Town. The southwest quadrant would be the area between Fairview and Cathedral Oaks. And the same mirroring areas north of the freeway. So it turned out that the survey was balanced between those areas, fairly balanced, and that the responses were fairly consistent across the neighborhoods. And interestingly enough, particularly with our questions related to Old Town and the experience in Old Town, parking, the look and feel of Old Town, the residents were the ones that wanted the changes the most, which is an important question for us to know because we have a lot of projects in Old Town, and it's a question the council often wrestles with how to address those. But looking toward district elections, I asked them after the survey was done, okay, now that it's done, let's break the data up into the quadrants and see how we did and if there were variances.
That's on page 71, so if everyone wants to know.
But that's just a sample profile. That's not...
That last bottom part is quadrants.
Well, right. It's
It's quadrants, but it's not data by quadrant. In other words, it shows me how many people in the survey were in each quadrant and what percentage were in each quadrant.
Yeah, I know your question is a larger one in terms of breaking it down in terms of that. And I believe what's being relayed by staff is that it was pretty consistent across the quadrants in terms of the data.
Okay. Can I ask one more question? How many total responses did we get to the survey?
451.
Okay.
We were guaranteed a minimum of 400 so that it was a statistically valid sample, which was really important for us in doing this survey. We wanted data that was actionable, and by having a statistically valid survey, this gives the council a lot of information from which to make decisions.
Okay.
I guess the follow-up question I would have with in regards to Ms. Schneider's question would be, within even that data being consistent across the quadrants, was there any case where the data sort of was out of the norm for any particular area for any question?
There wasn't anything that Dr. McClarney brought to me after reviewing the data, but I have not reviewed it since the September 4th meeting for that kind of analysis.
Just wondering.
Yes, Ms.
Massey.
I want to point out that a number of the ones in here are broken down by quadrants.
Right.
I read the whole thing twice. And I was one of the ones called. And as I testified twice, I think now, this will be the third time, it was the best survey I had ever had done. They spoke clearly. They spoke slowly. They were obviously well prepared. And I found it a pleasure to do. And I think we were very lucky to have this done by the group that did, because I don't know how it did with the other, you know, minority groups, but I can say I was really terribly impressed, and I was impressed with the way he did break it down into quadrants, like on page 26 is broken down. I saw 34. A number of them.
And page 17.
So it gives you a general idea, and I was amazed at how close all the communities were.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're a more mixed community, evidently, that all works together than I think many people thought. But I was really impressed by it.
Yes, anyway.
So I asked Ms. Valerie a question about the Spanish-speaking population. And thank you for explaining to me that most people decided to answer in English, and only 10% decided to answer in Spanish. And I understand that. Thank you for the explanation. The thing that I it jumps at me then is that for all of these things that we're used to do as we always do it, that's what happens. This community that has very little representation everywhere is quiet. They do not speak up. They do not go to meetings or answer surveys or, you know, maybe because they are shy about the language, maybe because they don't want to be noticed at this particular point in time, whatever it is. So I think that the thing that jumps at me is that we do need to do things in different ways, not the ways that, like, for instance, this survey, everyone is very happy with the survey, and I am too, reading the data. However, it did not capture the Hispanic, the Spanish-speaking community, I should say. And I think that's an important piece, that we cannot trust the ways that we always do things because we will get the same results. That's it.
Thank you. If I could clarify, I didn't say that people chose to take it in Spanish. We have no idea how many people spoke English and Spanish and chose to take it in English over Spanish. What I said was that the population that responded in Spanish was consistent with the demographics of the community according to the American Community Survey data that the consultant reviewed. So while there are about 25% of the people in Goleta speak a language other than English at home, it doesn't mean that they don't speak English as well. I just wanted to clarify that.
Absolutely. I know that is totally true. However, just being from the community and being in touch with a lot of people in the community, I know that there's a lot of people who do not speak English. And it's certainly a lot more. So I don't know the census and how many people of Hispanic origin live in Goleta. But it's a good percentage. And 10% of 451 is only 40 people. So, I mean, I don't think that would be representative of the community. But I understand your point, and I understand what they're saying. But it is different. The reality is very different. That's all I'm trying to say. I appreciate the effort because I am saying a lot of things that I didn't know. It's very interesting. However, that point jumps at me as it will continue. If we do the same things, the Spanish-speaking community will continue to be not represented. And we're talking about, and Missinda touched on protected and what? Protected and minorities. So we need more people. We need to catch them somehow.
Thank you for those comments. I think that is true, and we hired a consultant to do a statistically valid survey, and this is the way that they do it. We are engaging the Spanish-speaking community in other ways, and I'll be happy to talk about that when we do the director's report.
Thank you.
But for the purpose of the survey, I'm not sure what else to tell you.
Yeah. No, I understand. Thank you.
Chair Paz, yes. Just to answer the question regarding whether fill-ins, question 3 and question 4 are examples of verbatim responses. So if you take a look at those, and the survey on
which page?
That's begins on page 61. So question 3 and question 4 are on page 61. So the appendix of the survey is the survey questions that were asked. And where you see the word verbatim, which the two that I found so far is question 3, question 4, that means that they were asked to give an answer, and that was the answer that was recorded. So it wasn't a list of prepared responses, it was an actual response that was given by the person who was surveyed.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And so the next steps forward with regard how we will use this is This is an important document for the City Council, because as they move forward with strategic planning, and that's coming up, probably will begin around January, they'll be looking at this to look at how our community members are responding and what the needs are out there and what is the importance. As far as, like, with my experience recently, we just went through the support to other agencies, which is grant funding that's given to nonprofit agencies. This is important to me because as we sit down with the City Council and the committee and we start exploring the needs of our community, I can reflect back to this report and, you know, shows where the citizens want city funding to be focused and prioritized, or it shows a list of priorities. So this survey is really important for many things, but certainly one of the next steps would be for the City Council to evaluate this and look at it for the purposes of developing their strategic goals.
Additionally, we'll be looking at how effective our communications are, which is one of the parts of the survey that was really important for the purposes of this commission. We had 79% of respondents indicated they were very satisfied with our efforts thus far. Of the people who are dissatisfied with Goleta overall, 66% are still satisfied mm-hmm. with the communications, which was very interesting. 12% were dissatisfied with the city's efforts, and 9% did not have an opinion. So it gives us some information on how people like to be communicated with. We'll obviously continue to do the email and electronic communications. 90% said very or somewhat effective to communicate in that way, followed by the city's website, direct mail, of which we don't do a lot right now because we try to be green in our efforts and not use a lot of paper. Text messaging, which we do some of, but we don't push it, but we've heard that that is a better way to reach the Spanish-speaking community. So we'll be looking at that. And also a smartphone app, 75% of people said that that was an effective or very effective way. So I think that'll be something I'll be evaluating in the beginning of 2019 to see whether that's something to incorporate into the next fiscal budget. The other thing that we found very positive for the purposes of this committee were that people are interested in getting more involved. And 27% of the people that responded to the survey expressed interest in becoming more involved, either in a focus group or in meetings. So we are reaching out to these folks and letting them know some ways that they could get involved, giving them a preview of the concept of the Citizens Academy, and that we'll be hoping to launch that this spring, after, of course, going to the City Council to get their input. But for one out of four people to say, yes, I want to be more involved, that's a great, that's our initial pipeline list, as we don't have neighborhood groupings or districts yet. That's one place that we can start. And then earlier it was touched on the two-year term or the four-year term of mayor. That was a question that we asked in the survey, trying to dig in to see if we could get more input from people. And 49% favored a four-year term and 44% preferred a two-year term. So one of the questions I have for the commission tonight is, we had kind of tabled that discussion until we got the community survey results back to see when you wanted to discuss that, if you wanted to discuss it and make a recommendation, or if we just want to put it on hold for a while. And I want to again now ask, with this new information, is there a sense of wanting to bring this and make back to the PEC sooner rather than later, wait a year and see once we get through the first direct mayor election? Mm-hmm. Or what are your thoughts on that?
Ms. Massey.
I will say that I think everybody should have an opportunity to have a year to see how this works. Mm-hmm. And I think, I mean, you can have a vote now and, you know, try to change things. But it was felt very strongly of the people I talked to about it that they preferred the 2 year, but they definitely wouldn't vote for 4 year until they at least had seen what 1 year will bring us. And of course, that'll make a big difference on who the mayor is too, because it's completely different depending on who it is.
I I kind of share the same sentiments, or at least waiting for a little bit of period of time and then coming back to the issue. I think people will have a better sense. There was a lot going on in terms of the upcoming midterm elections. I think the focus will be a little better after the midterms and provide people the opportunity to really chime in a little more with a little clearer head, at least in my opinion.
And if we would want to explore it timely so that we, if it was a recommendation of the PEC mm-hmm. and approved by the City Council, that it would go in the election, it could go in the 2020 election. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we would want to time that. Boy, we worked on compensation in record time. You know, we started working on this a little late, but we were able to get it on the ballot this year. So really good work by the commission. We won't have that type of really tight timeline for this matter, but certainly we would bring it in time. So that is also on the community's mind mm-hmm. as they go to the ballot, you know, that this was explored by the PAC, this was explored by the City Council, and if approved to get on the ballot, that'll be fresh on their minds.
Thank you.
I have a comment, not a question. Oh, go ahead.
Just for timeline, and if we were to table this or to explore it, by what time definite do we have to come up with some sort of decision?
The City Council would need to approve to put it on the ballot, I believe, by July. It depends on the county's election schedule, mm-hmm. but I believe the compensation item went in July. So, for example, if we're wanting to shoot for the 2020 election, which would be my recommendation, you don't want to do a special election. Boy, that's going to cost a lot of money. It already is expensive, but to put a measure on the ballot, but more so it would be if it was a special election. So if we were shooting for the 2020 election, we would want to start talking about this maybe around January, February of 2020.
Okay, so that I would entertain either a motion or a direction to table that mm-hmm. around that time period, until that time period, and then start discussing it. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the rest of the commissioners feel on that, but
we've already heard from Ms. Matthew and myself. Ms. Bliss wanted to make a comment.
It would be helpful for me if, when we started talking about this, we got something that was similar to like the research you gave us on the compensation, but it was like a general overview of maybe like the most high priority projects the City Council is going to be dealing with and like the expected duration. Because if there are like a lot of projects that are multi-year, and I kind of think there might be, I don't totally know, it would just help me to know, how disruptive is it to have a 2-year turnover cycle versus like a 4-year turnover cycle? So I guess historicals and potentially like anything future looking.
Any other comments, questions? Kind of went a little bit related to this, but it's somewhat off topic. But I just wanted to note that it was interesting when you look at question 20, page 68, and you look at the lowest sort of ranked items, it was advertisements in local newspapers, and then channel 19. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I tend to look at that somewhat with not, I guess, realist eyes, in the sense that people don't read newspapers as much as they used to, and our local newspaper doesn't get as much use as it used to, and not too many people that I know subscribe to it, so that's not quite surprising. If they had specifically talked about specific newspapers or weekly publications, maybe we'd have a different sort of answer in terms of that. And then channel 19, I think in part it may be a reflection that people are just moving away from cable TV to much more on demand and cutting the wire, so to speak, and cutting cable. So that might be a little reflection of that. Those are my observations. So I'm not completely surprised in terms of that. The app part was a nice surprise. I like that. That's great. Any other comments, questions, before we move on to our director's report?
I would just ask Commissioner Manion if he had any comment on any of the report. I don't know if he had the opportunity to review it, but I'd like to hear from your perspective on outreach to the community, whether it's, you know, the adult age community, like your parents and their peers, or your peers. I'd like to get some feedback on what outreach is working, or what do you think we need to be doing differently?
I think as kids are moving, and most people are moving away from TV, they're more moving towards like the Netflix kind of thing. We have to put like an Instagram account because we don't have that yet, and like announce stuff on there like we have, and like other organizations do that. They have Instagram channels, they put announcements on that because YouTube is not a lot of people are going to like subscribe unless they know. And Twitter is also a very useful way because a lot of people are looking at that with all the uproar that's happening in Washington. I'm sure they'll look at this also.
Thank you.
I have a suggestion too.
Yes.
At the same time that you're doing the Channel 19, what we can do is to link that to Facebook and make it be visible online too. And that's a very successful way to do,
yeah,
to do things, in my experience.
Thank you. Thank you for all the comments. That moves us to item D, Director's Report.
Thank you. Two of the bullet points that are under the Director's Report this time are dates of outreach events. And at this point, we don't have any outreach events scheduled for the next 2 months that I have been made aware of, other than our regular City Council Planning Commission and DRB meetings. I will let you know that the culmination of the Bicycle Pedestrian Master Plan will be at the City Council this next Tuesday, and that has been a very lengthy and very involved community process to develop this plan for our community to make it safer for bicycles, bicyclists and pedestrians. We will be embarking on a restart of the zoning ordinance process, and those dates have yet to be established, but watch for those coming up. And then the Spanish engagement, I wanted to report back that our small group will be getting together next week to discuss Spanish engagement issues, and I am working to get a Spanish engagement coordinator RFP out so that we can have someone that assists our department in actually helping to create relationships, create materials, and doing a lot more Spanish or engagement of our Spanish-speaking community. I will note that the Isla Vista Youth Projects put an article in their newsletter for us. We collaborated with them after our last small group meeting for Spanish outreach. And so we'll continue to work with other agencies who are willing to put information in their newsletters just to let people know what's going on and to start making that direct connection.
Great.
That's it for me.
Thank you.
Sorry, is the Spanish engagement coordinator, is that like a full-time role with the city?
It's a part-time contract role.
Okay, thanks.
And is that like a coordinator only, or is it a contractor that it's an expert in outreach, or?
It's a person who has public engagement experience that is bilingual and has direct experience with the Spanish-speaking community.
Okay, thank you. Is she on board already?
No, I haven't put out the RFP yet.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Future agenda items?
We did have some outstanding items from the last meeting, as Commissioner Uribe brought up this evening. And ones that you'll see coming back then at the next meeting is responses to the ideas, to some of the ideas that we received at the last meeting. With this report and some of the other things we've been working on, we weren't able to get it on this agenda. But for the next agenda, we'll be bringing back the kiosks. There was Commissioner Massey had suggested having kiosks around the city at the sheriff's office. There was different areas. So looking at the cost of that and then looking and to explore how effective that could be, we'll be bringing that back to you along with Commissioner Uribe. You brought up the ride-alongs, getting new information on that. So again, we'll be bringing back some information on some other outreach ideas that we discussed at the previous meeting. And then the second item that I have on my task list is the report on general law versus charter city. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions, as you know, in the settlement agreement is, should the city of Goleta be a charter city? And so we'll be exploring what is the differences and what are the benefits in being a charter city versus a general law city. I mean, those are realistic. There's been so much change in legislation, I would say recently, but it hasn't just been recently, it's been over the years, that where it might have been beneficial to be a charter city at one point, it is not necessarily the case anymore. But we will be talking about that, because as our community members explore the district elections and these questions that are asked, as I had previously discussed with Ms. Inda, is it better to be a charter city or a general law city? Well, I don't think you can answer that question until you really know what the benefits or challenges might be with each of those. So I'll be bringing that back to you at the next meeting.
Thank you.
Do you have any items?
The only other item that we have on the forecast is the election of the chair and the vice chair, which is done annually by the clerk's office. And so she'll be facilitating that.
And I think by that time, we will have already gone to the City Council on the Citizens Academy, a report on the Citizen Academy. But I'd like to bring that report before you, even if it's just a summary of what was presented to the council, because I'm really excited about it. And it's going to be a lot of work on staff's part. But what's exciting about it is educating our community members about different functions of the city operations, of our budget, of projects that we're working on, things you need to be familiar with if you want to run for city council, the commissions and committees that are available. And that's going to be done through different segments of a 7-week program over 7 months. I can't remember, but I'd like to bring that back to you. Hopefully we do have a fan base that's watching out there who'd be able to who will know about it and would be interested. We will have limited spots. We hope to fill them, and we're going to be doing a lot of outreach, but we'll bring the details of that at the next meeting as well.
Thank you. There's nothing else. Can I have a motion to adjourn?
Second.
Okay. Second. We're adjourned. Thank you.
We did the right thing.
We did have fun.
And no harm done.
Thanks for the memory of cushions on the floor, hash with Denny Moore.
You might have been a headache, but you never were a bore. So thank you so much.
And thanks for memory of faults that you forgave, rainbows on a wave,
and stockings in the basin when a fella needs a shave. I thank you so much.